I'm very happy that Hanno made it here, that we have Hanno as a speaker. Hanno has been long time involved in SSL and TLS vulnerabilities. He discovered with a couple of other guys. Jura is also here, I think. Jura, where are you? There. the robot attack, there was also a start TLS injection attack and other stuff. So, strictly speaking, crypto, in terms of cryptography, not blockchain bullshit, is one of his hobbies. So, and as a side project, he also had for a longer time, I think, I looked at GitHub and was said that bad keys check-in was 2023. I thought it was a little bit earlier in my perception. Mm. Is that true or is that false?
I think the first commit must be 2021. But
okay, yeah. Good. Nevertheless, he's talking about the bad keys project, what all kind of weird stuff can happen with keys which are broken. And give a warm round of applause to Hanno, please.
Yeah. Hello. I want to talk about cryptographic keys today and broken cryptographic keys, compromised keys, and a tool that I've been developing for a while, which is called Bad Keys. So this started in 2021. There was a vulnerability in a package called KeyPair, which was a JavaScript library to generate RSA keys. And it essentially had a bug that it tried to detect whether a secure random number generator was available, but this detection was flawed, and as a fallback it used a kind of self-made insecure random number generator. This was, by the way, handled pretty poorly by GitHub and the others who disclosed it. Like, the information was basically not very informative what they published. Essentially what happens is that most of the keys generated by this library are easily guessable. There are a few thousand that come up again and again. In the context of that, there was a discussion on the Lobsters platform, and there was a user who said, there's no have I been pawned for public keys as far as I know. And I thought, yeah, but it would be cool if there would be one. And so I made one, and that's bad keys. So it's available as a website, but it's also backed by an open source tool that you can just install. It's written in Python. So you can give it a public key in different types of formats. You can use a standard PKCS key or a certificate or. And then it checks for various known vulnerabilities of cryptographic key generation. Because that's essentially what I just said. So it's available as a website, as a library, and as a tool. So if you do pen tests or something like that, you probably should use it whenever you're dealing with cryptographic keys. So there have been quite a few vulnerabilities in key generation, mostly with RSA, because there's more potential to do things wrong. So there have been keys where you had a shared prime factor between two keys. There had been the Rocker attack, which was anyone from BSI here? Because it was hardware that was certified by BSI to be secure, and then they found a key generation vulnerability in it. There's the so-called Fermat attack, which I will talk about later. Then there was this famous Debian OpenSSL bug, which I will also talk about later. Then there was this KeyPair vulnerability I just mentioned. And then there's something which I call public-private keys, which I will also talk about. The Debian OpenSSL bug. The older ones amongst us will remember. In 2008, the OpenSSL package in Debian had a severe security flaw, and essentially what happened is that they didn't use any real random numbers. When the only source of randomness they used was the process ID, and that can only have 32,000 values. So you could essentially just generate all the possible keys that this vulnerable package could generate and then iterate through them. So yeah, so there are just a few factors that impacted the key generation: one, the process ID and the architecture, and a few others. And this is kind of a motto I think everyone who works in security should always keep in mind. Old bugs never die. If you have a vulnerability, it doesn't matter how long ago it was, you will still find it impacting things today. So for example, in 2020, someone figured out, okay, there was a valid TLS certificate which was vulnerable to this Debian OpenSSL bug, which caused a bit of buzz because there are rules for how certificate authorities operate, the so-called baseline requirements, and they explicitly mention that CAs should check for known compromised keys like the Debian OpenSSL bug. So there's kind of an expectation that this doesn't happen. When I wrote bad keys, I figured out, okay, detecting this bug isn't that easy because like there were tools that didn't work on modern systems, and there were lists of affected keys, but they were all incomplete. The information was kind of confusing. If you look exactly at this bug, it's okay, it depends on the process ID. Then it affected OpenSSL and OpenSSH because OpenSSH uses OpenSSL to generate keys. But the keys were different depending on which one you used. Then there's a different output depending if you have a .rnd file in your home directory, which is kind of, you can have some additional randomness there. Then there were two different versions of this OpenSSL package, and they also generated different keys. And then it depended on the architecture. And then, of course, for RSA keys, you can have basically an arbitrary key size, but usually people just use common sizes like 2048 or 1496. And it affected keys. This OpenSSL version supported three different algorithms, which is RSA, DSA, which today nobody uses really anymore, and elliptic curves. The elliptic curve thing was interesting because back then someone had written a paper and they wrote that this OpenSSL version does not support elliptic curves, which was wrong. But then everyone believed that elliptic curve keys were not affected, which was wrong. And I only figured out like 2 years ago. But I figured that all out, and bad keys now detects all the plausible variations of this bug. I cannot really detect all because arbitrary key size and obscure architectures and things like that. But most of the plausible ones I can detect. So earlier this year I thought maybe I should use bad keys to check if DKIM keys people use are secure. So DKIM is kind of an email signature system. I think most of you will know this. You can publish a public key in DNS, and then your email server signs emails, and this kind of an anti-spoofing mechanism. One thing that makes scanning for DKIM a bit challenging is that you have, this is like how a DKIM signature looks, and it has this S thing, and that is the so-called selector, and that tells you where you find the key. So you use the selector dot underscore domain key dot domain. So in order to find a DKIM key, you need the selector, and that's part of the signature. So how do you scan for that? One thing you can do is, of course, you get a lot of emails, like, I don't know, your own emails or some emails you find somewhere on the internet, and extract these selectors and then scan for them. That works, but it doesn't scale very well. I got a few thousand, but the other thing you can do is just kind of brute force it, because this selector is basically arbitrary string, but people will use things like DKIM or mail or key. And so by just scanning for 10 very common selectors, I was able to scan quite a large number of keys. So in the Tranco top 1 million list, I was able, with this brute force method, to extract around 350,000 records with a valid RSA key for DKIM. And of those, More than 800 were vulnerable to the Debian OpenSSL bug from 2008. This was earlier this year. Some of the domains were, I don't know, large companies, companies where you might think they have something to do with security. You may wonder, okay, why is DKIM so heavily affected by this bug? I have a bit of a theory, and that is, like, in 2006, this bug was introduced, and in 2008, it was discovered. And in 2007, DKIM was published. So it may just be that in 2007, many people implemented DKIM and then never touched their setup again, and the keys were still there. Most of these keys were configured as a CNAME, which is kind of like a forward in DNS to a company that's called Cakemail. I tried to do responsible disclosure. Unfortunately, they had a security TXT file with an email address that didn't work. That's not how you should have your security contacts managed. Then, I played around a bit with this and tried to sign some test emails, and then I noticed, okay, if I open them in Gmail, I see these logos here, and that's something that is called BME. BME is kind of, if you want a logo like this, you have to pay a lot of money to one of two certificate authorities. One of them is called Entrust, and interesting enough, they were also affected by this. I have given a bit of a longer talk about DKIM and BME, because BME itself is also like, the spec looks kind of weird and has inherent security flaws, but I don't have that much time today. I have given another talk, and there's a video of that. Okay, next vulnerability I want to talk about is the Fermat attack, which is probably like the oldest vulnerability I've ever dealt with, because the algorithm has been invented in the 1600s. So RSA, depending on how much you know about crypto, so in RSA we have something which is called the modulus, and we usually just call it N. And that is the product of two primes. And if you can find these two primes, you can find the private key. So if you can find these from N is part of the public key, and P and Q is part of the private key, and you can calculate the rest of the private key if you have P and Q. That's also called factoring. Like, if you have a large number and can find the prime factors, then you can break RSA. So Pierre de Fermat, the famous mathematician, has found an algorithm where you can factor large numbers efficiently if the prime factors are of similar size. So if they only differ by a few thousand or even much more, but if you have two large primes, but they are kind of in the same range, then you can factor that efficiently. So you may wonder, okay, here's a way how to generate RSA keys that are not secure. You just generate a large random number, and then you find the next prime and the prime after that. And these two primes you use for your RSA key. Because they are next to each other, that means the difference isn't so big between them. Are there such RSA keys? Of course, if I'm asking the question, the answer is, of course, yes. I figured out, okay, there are printers from both Canon and Fujifilm that have a web interface, and the certificate for that web interface has keys which can be attacked with this Fermat factorization. I later learned, okay, they both use something called a library called SafeZone, which is from Rambus, and yeah. Then public-private keys. This is a public-private key. It's a private key because it says begin private key, but it's a public key because it's on GitHub. You should not use a key like this for your TLS certificates. But some people do, like this key has been used for 2 TLS certificates. They seem unrelated. I have no idea how that happened, but apparently it did. Of course, there are many public private keys. You have, I mean, this is from OpenSSL. It's just OpenSSL, of course, has tests, and they have some private keys in their tests. You also have examples in documentation or on websites that are explaining something about cryptography. You have often hard-coded keys in software, which is not a good idea, but people do it, particularly in firmware and IoT and stuff like that. And sometimes you have leaks, like someone just loses a private key and it ends up on the internet. This is an interesting thing I found out recently. If you're trying to upload a private key to a GitHub repository, and that key is used on a GitHub account as the SSH key, then GitHub will tell you that. So if you have a large number of keys and want to know if they are, belong to any GitHub account, then you can test it by doing that. And I mean, I'm not doing this deliberately, it's just I'm collecting these keys and then... And I'm not really sure what to do about it, because like GitHub doesn't really have a security contact. They only have a bug bounty program, but it's not really a vulnerability in GitHub. It's just, I would like to tell them that they should probably block these accounts. If anyone has a good idea what to do, I don't know. Finally, I want to talk a bit about what I plan for the future of bad keys. And I can say now that I just recently got some funding approved from the NGI Zero project from NLNet. Like, they are basically funding many open source projects for privacy and security and stuff like that. So I want to just massively increase the coverage of these public-private keys. Essentially, I want to automate that more, that I can just scan all the packages from Linux distributions and many GitHub repos and stuff like that and extract all the private keys in there. Then I want to do some kind of regular monitoring of web certificates of DKIM and DNSSEC. And I also want to create something like a key compromise service where you can say, oh, I found a key somewhere on the internet. What should I do with it? And maybe it belongs to a certificate. Then you can submit it to me, and I will automatically make sure that if there is a certificate, it gets revoked. And then it later will get added to the block list that Bad Keys is using. Yeah. Finally, I noticed talking to people that many security people at some point, they had the idea, I should look for private keys in apps or in firmwares or whatever. If you've ever done something like that and still have the keys laying around and want to share them with me, please talk to me. Yeah, that was it. I recommend that you use bad keys if you ever deal with cryptographic keys. And then you can check if they are affected by any known vulnerabilities. And I'm not sure how much time we have for questions.
We should have time for one or two questions. Are there any? Please step up. If so. Okay. There's one, okay.
There's one.
Oh. who make it first to you?
Okay. Danke. Hanno, wie viele Bad Keys hast du schon gesammelt?
Also wenn du jetzt diese Debian Keys mitzählst, sind es ein paar hunderttausend, aber...
Okay, super.
Ja.
Danke, rentiert sich.
I've got two related questions, both related to OpenID keys, which you can find on the internet, on the web, and Scrape probably also could be interesting. Have you looked into that, if there are any bad keys in OpenID servers?
No, I don't know OpenID enough to how I would do that, but maybe we can talk later, yeah. And like how to scan for them or something.
Might be interesting. Should be relatively easy to scan for them.
Yeah.
Okay, that obsoletes my second question, so let's talk later.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, one other short question, please.
Hallo, danke für den Vortrag. Inwiefern hast du dir schon neuere Kryptosysteme angeschaut, zum Beispiel das Signalprotokoll oder Matrix, sowas wie BLS?
Ja, also die Krypto ist ja meistens dieselbe. Also Public Key Krypto, die verwenden auch alle entweder elliptische Kurven oder RSA. Insofern, deren Code habe ich wahrscheinlich schon mal durchgescannt nach Beispielkeys. Ich würde bei sowas wie Signal nicht von ausgehen, dass irgendjemand manuell da einen Key einträgt. Deswegen glaube ich nicht, dass da in der Hinsicht was passiert. Ja.
Es gibt da vielleicht einfachere Fälle von den Varianten, die du besprochen hast, mit wo Keys Moduli, die gleich 1 sind, zum Beispiel im RFC noch nicht ausgeschlossen sind. Deswegen frage ich, ob du dich dafür interessierst, andere Protokolle zu analysieren.
Okay, vielleicht auch nochmal später sprechen, ja.
Okay, we're actually good on time, so if you have another question, step up. Okay, there's no such question. Then give another warm round of applause to Hanno's great talk, or for Hanno.